Philadelphia Eagles now squarely first place NFC East. They beat the Commanders last night. It was a really tight game until Saquon Barkley got a hold of things. Then it wasn't. Two fourth quarter touchdowns from Barkley. That offseason signing has obviously paid off like gangbusters. And, you know, really the Eagles defense is kind of what got things started. Commanders decide to go for what should be a very controversial now fourth and two. The snap was kind of botched, and the Eagles sniffed it out. So Jaden Daniels of the Commanders gets no yardage on the play. Then Barkley scores on the ensuing drive. And then Daniels, trying to do way too much, throws a pretty bad interception, and the Eagles and Barkley scored off that drive as well. And there was just not any type of time for the Commanders to get themselves back in the game.
Right. It was shaping up to be a disaster for the Eagles because they were outplaying the Commanders. They just were missing field goals, and they couldn't really knock it in the red zone. That I do not understand what Dan Quinn was doing, because the Commanders couldn't block Jalen Carter, and therefore their short yardage game was all messed up.
Yep.
They had no chance on that fourth and two play. It almost fell apart about three different times. I think that they realized they weren't able to handle Saquon Barkley in the offensive line anymore. The Eagles were going to score. The better team won last night.
Yep.
Commanders, they can beat a bad team. I don't think they're an elite team, but that's okay. You know what? We're not sitting here and tearing the Commanders apart just because they're not going to knock off the Lions.
That's true. I'm just curious, you know, we get into these things when it's halfway through the season, like we feel like we know everything. And yes, I think Jaden Daniels is obviously going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year, but I don't believe that the entire story of the season has been written yet when it comes to the Commanders and specifically the rookie quarterback and their offensive coordinator. I think that it's possible things feel and look a lot different, and to be honest, maybe not as good at the end of the year as they felt in the first half of the season when the Commanders have been gangbusters and the culture's turned around and everyone's talking about Daniels and how ready for the NFL he looks, and all that's true. But it's an offensive coordinator who's known for second half swoons as a coach. It's a rookie quarterback who could be hitting a wall and is also maybe dealing with some rib injury and stuff like that. So I just think we might be feeling a different way about this rookie class and what the pecking order is by the end of the season than we do right now.
I 100% disagree. On the pecking order, it's going to be Daniels one, big drop, and then a sort of a two-way tie between Nix and May, and then fourth will be Caleb Williams.
Wow.
See, but no, I don't think that's hot. That's where we're at right now.
I know, but I'm really curious to see what the Bears, how if they look any different with a new offensive coordinator and everyone's sort of feet to the fire now, right? Because you knew that the coaching staff maybe came in feeling a little on the hot seat, but now everyone's been really put on alert. And they're facing the Packers this week. If the Bears beat the Packers in a new offensive coordinator bump or what have you, then Caleb is back in play as being, you know, the best quarterback from this draft.
I don't think so. I really don't. To say he's... Do you think he's back in play to win Rookie of the Year? No. So how can he be back in play to be the best quarterback from this draft? I guess it doesn't really matter theoretically. I just don't see that happening. They just lost 19-3 to the Patriots in Chicago. That'd be such a gigantic leap for them. Unless Thomas Brown, the new offensive coordinator, is Bill Walsh reincarnated.
Yeah.
I just don't see how you go from scoring 3 points at home against the Patriots to beating, getting healthier Packers team.
Well, this could be one of those things where Jaden Daniels wins Rookie of the Year, but Caleb actually ends up having the better career, and this looks like a trivia question that might trip people up.
When you say Caleb, you meant Drake?
You're crazy.
I honestly, now I think you have a three-way debate between who's the best out of those three. But Drake May is going to be in that mix. Yeah, I don't see the Caleb thing even close right now. Right now.
855-212-4227. Okay, got a few more big, massive, gigantic games this weekend. Okay? Big, gigantic games this weekend. Let's throw out a little who needs this more. And we're going to play this real fast. Okay? Manny, maybe I'll take a little music. I'm throwing this curveball to you guys live on the air. Why don't we do a little bit of who does this mean more to? With all of our big NFL games. EJ, throw one out. We're going to do this real fast.
All right, so rapid fire here. Let's begin with Ravens-Steelers. Division rivalry here.
Obviously, it's got to be way more to the Steelers. Yeah. To me, the Ravens, I think the Lamar Jackson being 1-3 against the Steelers, it just feels like a silly stat that doesn't mean anything. He's barely played against this team because of injury.
Okay, I agree it's with the Steelers, but the thing is, the Steelers own mobile quarterbacks. Tomlin hasn't figured out, so I do think it means something. I do think that game means something to the Ravens because their record is actually not quite as good as it should be, because they're probably the best team in the AFC. But the Steelers, like, this is finally we get to see, are they for real?
Who's next?
Let's go Chiefs Bills. Close to Maggie's heart here.
I think people think it's the Bills. And yeah, they can't get blown out, but this means more to the Chiefs because they're trying to go for the undefeated season.
Yeah, finally!
Yes, that was Tyler Bass finally hitting a long field goal, and I was celebrating.
They're trying to go for the undefeated season. The fact that they mailed in last week against the Broncos and the week before against Tampa Bay, what indication is that they're going for the undefeated season? They literally just had to block a 35-yard field goal, an extra point from the Broncos to beat the Broncos in KC.
And they'd been setting it up all game.
They don't care at all about the regular season. They don't care about undefeated. They don't care what happens on this game. They care about the postseason.
Well, that's how the Bills should feel, too. And I don't know if it is that way.
You know what? You're right. Like, these are two teams that should have higher goals.
Let's talk Niners Seahawks, a little NFC West action here.
I think it's the Niners because the Niners are really an NFC threat. The Seahawks might sneak into the playoffs. Seahawks are going to need a new quarterback next year. So, like, what are we really doing with the Seahawks? For the Niners, now we're in the situation with the Cardinals where every game actually matters. You can't just throw away special teams games left or right and make the playoffs.
I have to agree with Perloff. The 49ers have way more at stake here, and if they lose this game, it's going to be official panic time for 49ers and their fans. Okay, last one.
All right, let's go to Sunday night then. Let's go Chargers-Bengals.
It's got to be the Bengals. If they lose this game, almost zero margin for error the rest of the way, even if they want to sneak into the playoffs. And we would be talking about a fully healthy Joe Burrow year where they do not make the postseason. That's a failure by all accounts of the organization. You cannot waste seasons when he's healthy, considering how much injury history he's had.
I'm telling you, it's the kicker. They do not have faith, and they're just like the Niners. They have blown games in bizarre ways again and again and again. Also, can T. Higgins play, for God's sakes? Like, just, dude, play. It's Sunday night. Are you ever going to play again? Like, you wanted this big paycheck. You got to actually play some football.
There you go. That's a little who needs it more this weekend. All right, we're fitting a lot in right now. Do we have time? You want to do it? Okay. On Fridays, we got to make some picks.
Maggie and Perloff's NFL Picks.
We never stop on this show. That's it. You just go one thing right to the next, right to the next. Just hitting you from all angles. EJ, what are our records?
Okay, so Maggie, you had a rough week. Last week you went 2-3. So now you are 30-20 on the year. So not a bad overall record. Perloff, you had a better week. You were 3-2. So now you're 27-23.
I mean, we're both crushing it right now. How we do this on the Maggie and Perloff show, two college picks, one over under, one against the spread, three NFL picks, over under, against the spread, and a player prop. Perloff, I'll give you the floor first to talk about college football.
All right, college. I've been doing really well on Colorado, but I'm not going to pick them for my spread game this week. I'm going to take the over on Colorado. I feel like LaJonte Wester is unstoppable. Somehow Utah sucks the energy out of every game, but I've still got faith in the Buffs. I'm going over 45 in that game because my pick, close your ears, Boise.
Oh, don't do that.
Yes, I've been studying San Jose State football for years. No, I actually, at a certain point, this spread is crazy, right? San Jose State gets plus 14 against Boise, who's been playing some close games lately. Listen, I'm all about the Ashton Gentry Heisman campaign. That seems like too many points. So I'm going to have San Jose State plus 14.
What? Okay. I don't love that for our fans in Boise.
We're on in San Jose, too. Let's be fair.
For my college picks, I know it's tough to bet unders when it comes to college football because it feels rare. But Tennessee, Georgia, I don't see where the scoring's really going to come here. So 47, I'm going to go under with this one. It's questionable about Nico Iamaleava and whether he's going to play the quarterback. And also for Trevor Etienne for Georgia, he's also out. So you got major offensive weapons on both sides who are either may not play or one won't play in this game. So I'll take the under. For my against the spread, Have you guys noticed a little of the disrespect heading Texas's way? How Texas would be the highest ranked SEC team in the college football playoff? Who have they beaten? They lost to Georgia at home by 2 touchdowns. So I think Texas has got to put on some style points a little bit just so that the conversation dies down a little around them. Texas at Arkansas, I'm going to lay the 12. I think they win this game by 2 touchdowns.
You know, it's a really critical factor in that Tennessee under is how do they return Carson Beck's interceptions? Do they just take a knee or do they try and run them to the house? Honestly, I feel like a defensive touchdown is your worst enemy. But you're right.
I've seen
those offenses. It's going to be hard for them to get for Tennessee's offense. It doesn't scare anyone. I like both your picks. Okay. NFL. I don't know if I'm jinxing you here. I didn't want to bet the actual game. Bills Chiefs. I'm going to go over 45.5, mostly because you convinced me they're never going to be able to cover Travis Kelce. This feels like a 26-23 game. I think that was the score in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
It's going to hover around there, but I'm going to watch this game gleefully. And unlike you, I will not be stressed. I will just be rooting for points, taking the over Bills Chiefs. My spread game is so untalked about, but this is a bet against the New Orleans Saints. The New Orleans Saints won against Atlanta last week, but they tried desperately to lose. I'm taking the Browns +1 against the Saints because I think the Saints are terrible. That's all the logic I got. Speaking of terrible, I'm going to go with an under on my total.
Okay.
Cooper Rush, 185 passing yards. That's not a lot of passing yards, but Houston Texans defense is awesome. I am kind of hedging that maybe Trey Lance gets into the game. Cooper Rush, under 185 passing yards for my prop.
It makes a lot of sense. You really jumped off that Cooper Rush bandwagon pretty fast.
I jumped up. But by the way, I feel like if I lose this one, I'm kind of happy anyway. Because redheaded quarterbacks, I'm all about that, Mike.
So funny. Such an odd way to pick a game and a person to root for. But no, I get what you're doing. Okay, for my three NFL picks, I'm actually going to change a little bit on the fly here. I get this is the biggest spread of the entire NFL season, and I don't care. I'm going to take the Lions, and I'm going to lay the 14. They're welcoming the Jags into Detroit.
Mm.
Which team is good and which team is bad?
Perfect.
The Mackenzie Jones experience is coming your way.
Yeah,
What's his name? McCoracle. What is Mac Jones' real name? Look that up.
This is why we call him Mac. Just Mac.
Michael McCorkle.
McCorkle.
Yeah, McCorkle.
He's playing football against the best team in the league, Detroit Lions, this Sunday. And Maggie's advising, don't worry about the 14.
I'm saying don't worry about the 14. And I feel comfortable with that because the Lions have blown out teams that I think are around about the same skill level as the Jags, like the Titans.
Remember what they did to the Cowboys?
It was bad. There you go. Give me the Lions, and I'm going to lay the 14, even though it's a big spread.
They'll never see it coming.
They'll never see it coming. Packers, Bears, that's going to be my over at 40.5. The reason why I want to take the over here is I am betting that this Caleb Williams and Bears offense is going to look better now that they've made an offensive coordinator switch. And also now I got the Green Bay Packers coming off their bye. So I'm thinking that Jordan Love is going to be feeling pretty good. Give me the over 40.5. That is just not a big number.
That number is ridiculous.
It's very small, right?
That is a definite hit. I'm betting on that right now.
Okay. You're allowed to. And then for my player prop, EJ, close your ears. I've got Jonathan Taylor, and I believe it was 20.5. carries against your New York Jets.
Why are you doing that to EJ? Because if he gets 21 carries, the Colts are winning that game.
I'm just saying it's because I watched the Jets.
He's a bum.
And I don't think their defense has been able to stop the run very effectively.
Don't be a freaking weirdo.
That would also be an accurate assessment, Maggie.
Yeah, thanks. It's just eyes and ears and a brain. I have no idea what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, but if he breaks a bunch of 60-yard runs, he's not going to need to get to 21. No, you're right. That's a... Nick Costas was on advised pick the Colts. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, I just think it's going to have to be about the run game. Anthony Richardson and handing the ball off to Jonathan Taylor, it's a good way to win a game. And don't forget, you got a Jonathan Taylor homecoming. He's from Jersey. I don't know if that plays in. But anyway, 20.5. There you go. And those are the Maggie and Perloff picks. Perloff, just recap yours really fast.
Okay, I have the Colorado over 45 against Utah. San Jose State +14 against Boise. Browns +1. Give me the point against the Saints. And Cooper Rush, under 185 passing yards. Bills Chiefs over 45.5.
Okay, and for me, I'm going to take the Tennessee-Georgia under 47. I'm going to take Texas, and I'm going to lay the 12. They're on the road to play Arkansas. Sorry to our friends in Arkansas. We know we're on there. This is more about Texas than you guys. That's my college. For Detroit, I will lay the 14 points. They are welcoming the Jags into town. I will take the Packers-Bears over 40.5 and give me Jonathan Taylor over 20.5 carries against the New York Jets.
Not for betting purposes, but do you have a lean in Georgia, Tennessee?
Yeah, I'm leaning Georgia.
Okay. Well, I know you did your total on that
one. Yeah, I did. What about you?
Yeah, I feel like this is a desperation game for Georgia. Losing, you're out. So the desperation factor to me is the biggest factor.
Same for Tennessee, though. Okay, there you go. Those are our picks. We'll put them up on our social media at Maggie and Pearl on X. All right, we're going to unpack the Tyson-Paul fight in only a way that we can. Maggie and Perloff.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. You know what? It's really fun to make fun of Manny's New York Giants for giving me Saquon Barkley. But Andrew Bogus, who's going to give us updates right now, you've given up on the Giants so bad, I take no glee in your misery.
Yeah, you can't get me with the Giants. Mets, Rangers, that's your targets. But the Giants, I got nothing.
Well, we just found out that Bogus's Hammurabi's Code style of parenting just made it to a company-wide email that circulates to everybody.
Yeah. Yep.
That your eye for an eye, I step on one of your Legos, therefore I'm okay with my child stepping on a shard of glass.
Correct.
Yeah, made the company email?
I feel like I should reply all because it feels like my message is getting lost in all this because this is how my wife presented it to the kids last night as she played it for them. As if I want them to step on glass. I do not. I don't put glass down that they have to walk through.
Your house is not booby-trapped?
All I said was, is them stepping on a tiny piece of glass would make up for the umpteen million times I thought he did a foot amputation because I stepped on one of their Lego pieces. That's all. I don't want it to happen, but if it did, I'd have limited sympathy.
Be like, you know, Daddy was also dropping you out of the crib. Like, what else is this time?
No, I just slept and didn't hear them cry.
That's unforgivable.
Thanks.
What headlines do we have today?
Could things be going any better in Philadelphia if we ignore the Phillies losing to the Mets and the Sixers load managing into the lottery? The Eagles have increased their NFC East lead with their sixth win in a row, and Jason Kelce can sing.
When my dude is smoking, Santa puts my name upon his nice list.
He said, son, you're famous in Philly. You'll always be famous in Philly.
And you know you'll always be winning. Whoop. When you're coming home for Christmas. Whoop. And I don't want to see those tears again. You know Santa drives an Astro van.
All right, so the band is Mountjoy. The song is Astrovan, normally about drugs and Jesus, but they have switched to be about drugs and Santa and Christmas, and the deep voice in that song is Jason Kelce singing back up to Matt Quinn of Mountjoy.
Mountjoy, fantastic band.
Great band.
Great Philly band.
Except for the Philly portion of their being.
Well, wait a minute. I thought where you were going with this was Jason Kelce has a Christmas song with Stevie Nicks.
This is, I don't know how many years Perloff might, if he's listening, which he probably not, would know better. The Eagles offensive line has put out a Christmas album for multiple years, and this song is part of this year's release.
Got it.
But the other one that you meant, the Stevie Nicks one, apparently is doing better than Mariah Carey's
All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Ooh, wow. Right.
Yes, it's number one right now.
Is it really?
It's November 15th.
Right.
Why we're even playing Christmas music right now is basically a crime. However, it is number one. Christmas music doesn't start till after Thanksgiving.
Agreed.
Society. Get it together, everyone.
They showed a picture of the two of them, Jason Kelce and Stevie Nicks. They're an adorable duet. Adorable.
Who's doing the heavy lifting here? This is Stevie Nicks is essentially executing the tush push of this song. She's the secret sauce, not Kelce.
I don't know what that. I think out of context, that sounded really weird.
makes total sense. Yeah.
And speaking of the tush push, that's how the Eagles got the first of their three fourth quarter touchdowns last night. They trailed the Commanders 10-6 entering that final period. Hurts got tush pushed in, and then Saquon Barkley ran in two from distance, and they had a 26-18 win. It was far from pretty, but it was victory number 8 for Nick Sirianni's club.
Yeah, it was a good win. Anytime you can get a win in this league, it's huge. And that's a good opponent. So much respect for the coaches on that opposite team and the players on that Washington team.
And that respect going up for Washington head coach Dan Quinn, because he went for it on 4th and 2 instead of a go-ahead field goal about midway through the 4th. The Eagles stopped that Jaden Daniels run, which led to Barkley's first touchdown. Then they picked off Daniels, set up Barkley's 2nd. The Eagle win streak is 6. The Commanders lose for the 2nd time in 5 days. So Philly's lead atop the NFC East is now a game and a half. College football, Florida says freshman QB DJ Lagway is back tomorrow against LSU after missing last weekend's loss to Texas with a hamstring injury. And lastly, from sports where you kick balls.
Cardoso's ball through the middle. Pulisic slides it in towards Ricardo Pepe. And it's Pepe's goal inside the first 5 minutes. Ricardo Pepe handed the start by Maurizio Pochettino. And it doesn't take him long to find the net.
That's from TNT last night. Ricardo Pepi scoring early. It stood up. U.S. men's soccer starting its Nations League quarterfinal with a 1-0 win in Jamaica. The 2nd leg is Monday night in St. Louis. The Tampa Bay Rays will play next season at Steinbrenner Field in Tampa. The Yankees are reportedly getting about $15 million for letting the Rays use the home of their single-A affiliate. Hal Steinbrenner said in a statement yesterday, they know how important it was to keep the organization near Tampa. And it took Connor McDavid 659 games. It took Wayne Gretzky 424. McDavid scoring his 1,000th career point in last night's 3-2 OT win over Nashville. Mario Lemieux and Mike Bossy also got to the milestone in fewer games. Gretzky, Lemieux, and Steve Yzerman were younger than the 27-year-old McDavid. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, thank you so much. Fantastic job. All right, we're going to do a quick schedule switch here because we are delighted to welcome in the new radio voice of the New York Yankees, the one and only Dave Sims. And Dave, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, Andrew Bogish, I know you're familiar with all of us. But thank you so much and congratulations.
Thank you so much. And to hear that song, now I really know I'm at home. You know, it's like, start spreading the news.
You know, Dave, we're on all across the country right here on the Infinity Sports Network, and we're on in Seattle. So before we get to the New York of it all, you know, you are such a legend and staple of the Mariners and their broadcast. Before we switch gears to the Yankees, which I know everyone's so excited about, how about a word for the Mariners and all the amazing years you had there?
Well, I tell you, I put out a video last night on Instagram, and I think it went everywhere, thanking folks in Seattle for their kindness over the years. You know, when I first got there, Dave Niehaus, who eventually went in the Hall of Fame, and he had been their guy for a long time, he and Rick Riz. And Dave Niehaus was there from day one. A lot of losing seasons. And so he, you know, he was the conscience. He was the heartbeat of the area. And to have played my part in it for 18 years doing radio and TV, and to have met so many great people, sponsors, advertisers, fans. And I think one memory is a lot of great memories, but one memory comes to mind in the playoffs. We made the playoffs finally a few years ago, and we went 18 innings against the Astros. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Pena beats us with a home run. But for the last 9 innings, those fans, full house, stood the entire time and cheered their lungs out, their hearts out. And that speaks really well of Seattle as a sports town. And their love of baseball and the hunger for a championship.
Yep.
So many thanks to everybody in Seattle. Much love, much respect. And as I said in my video last night, go Mariners, go Yankees!
Dave, you did a lot of sports, but you remind me of something. Baseball, you grew up in Philadelphia, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like my connection to the broadcast team, the connection to a baseball announcer is just different than anything in sports.
Totally.
It's more emotionally tied.
Good word, because I had on Instagram DM two emotional videos from two young men. I grew up with you.
Yeah.
You know, you're the reason I know and love baseball. You're the reason I'm a Mariner fan. You're the reason, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
And that's deep.
Yeah.
But it is true of all the sports, you're going to have a relationship with fans. I mean, I hear from people, hey man, you're in our house every night.
Yep.
Don't call the cops, okay? And it is an emotional tie. It really is. And you know, like during my time, particularly on radio, even on TV, you could tell by the pitch and timbre of my voice that the Mariners are going great. You could hear it. And if they were going poorly, I mean, I would tell the truth, but you get it's like, but then that explosion of energy, you know, here in the eighth inning, swing to drive, deep left field, you know, you just, so, I grew up in Philly listening to a guy named Bill Campbell who.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay, so you're familiar.
Yeah, and the legend. The legend.
Bill, he was my first guy because he did the Phillies. Actually, I first discovered him doing the Eagles, old enough to remember the 60 championship. Then he goes on to do the Dick Allen Phillies. Then he did the Dr. J 76ers. So he's, you know, one of my idols. And before he passed, I got a chance to talk to him and tell him that. And he was like, hey, thanks. It's very kind of you. I said, no, you have no idea.
I think we all have that guy.
Totally.
I know Maggie with the Mets.
Yep,
and,
absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, John Sterling is that for a lot of people.
No doubt about it.
I always say listening to John Sterling was like putting on a comfortable pair of slippers and a robe. You know, that's sort of how it felt. But, you know, you have a different style. And your style is phenomenal, Dave. And we're such big fans of yours. Do you think about what people might be expecting? Mm. You know, the funny home run calls, and you have your own catchphrases, which are great. We love the hey now and everything. When Dave Sims is doing hey now, you get goosebumps on your arm. But would you want to continue doing the fun home run calls that Sterling did, or do you feel like you got to let that go?
John's John, Dave is Dave.
Yep.
And that's like when Dave Niehaus used to say, fly away. You know, you got to go somewhere else. He would do, you know, with somebody bases loaded, swing and drive, deep left field, get out the right, mustard, grandma's grab salami time. That's his. That is his. And you don't. I don't touch that. I respect it. Dave was a good guy. He was good to me. But I, as the song goes, I got to be me.
Yep.
And you know, you're gonna hear, you know, giddy up and gone. You're gonna hear hey now. You're gonna hear hey, he rang the bell. I mean, you're gonna hear a lot of that. That's me. And that's what I bring to the table, and that's what the, you know, FAN and the Yankees, they put their faith in me you know, to continue on what I do.
Let me ask about the team you will be calling. Obviously, we watch them very closely. We're deep into the fall this year.
Yep.
Is it World Series next year? Are they going to get over that hump?
I tell you, I want to see how the guys who return, the after effects of that World Series, and particularly the fifth inning. And I want to see what kind of bounce back they have. I mean, I was agog and aghast watching the fifth inning like everybody else was in that last game. I was like, I've never seen anything, certainly not in a World Series game, and I can't remember anything like that in a regular season game. It was heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. It happens. It's baseball. I mean, that's the answer to almost everything in baseball. So we'll see how they bounce back. I think the moves will be made to fortify the team, to strengthen the team, and knowing how prideful pro athletes are, hey man, we got to erase that, and we got to take it to the next level.
Dave Sims is joining us. So pleased that he could stop by for a moment. It was just announced yesterday. It was confirmed that you are the new radio voice of the New York Yankees, and I'm sure you always feel this when you're calling any professional sporting event that you. It's at any time it's possible you're calling the greatest moments of somebody's life, right? That you become the soundtrack for the fans, but for the athlete themselves. With the Yankees and their history, not that the Mariners don't have a great history, but with the Yankees and their history, do you think about my calls are the ones that are be written into the history book of the team that is one of the most storied franchises in all of North America?
Maybe
the world.
Not specifically until you just said it, but yeah,
no
that's
pressure,
certainly
Dave.
That's certainly on. I mean, that's on the table. And to your point, I can remember it would have been the 23 season when we had Teoscar Hernandez, and I'd taken a day off, or I was on TV or something. It might have been a day off, and he had hit a home run. So I see him the next day. Hey man, I wanted to hear your home run call for me. So I'm aware of it. It's not something I think about. I'm focused on the game, and you know, looking forward to working with Susan. You know, we're gonna have some laughs. We're gonna tell stories. But my whole thing as a Marty Glickman disciple, and you youngsters look up Marty Glickman, who is the rabbi of all New York sportscasters of our generation. Tell me what's going on in the game. You know, now I'm focused solely on radio now. I don't have TV or adding captions, but on radio, hey, the left fielder just took a couple of steps to his left. Let's see what this pitch is. Here's a 2-2.
Yep.
You know, that kind of detail. And he always said, I want to know what it looks like, what it smells like, who's moving, how's the defense set, did the batter make an adjustment? We have Victor Robles in Seattle. I saw him, and I was on radio a couple of times. I said, Victor just moved up in the box. He's looking for a breaking ball. I mean, he took a step and a half. The pitcher's into his wind, and he moved up about a foot and a half, and sure enough, he got a breaking ball. Line drive, right field, base hit.
Yep.
So that kind of detail, I pride myself on that. And then, you know, energy level, I've never hurt for that. So, I mean, I used to do, when I was here, when I was over at FAN, actually before that, WNBC, before it became. And if there were no games on at night, I did 7:30 to midnight with Mike Breen helping me, you know, producing and coming on air, and we do segments. So, and I can remember a guy used to call, how do you stay energized? It's 11:45. I said, hey, it's my job. I love it. And, you know, come on.
Dave, now that we're under the same corporate umbrella, there are, you might not know, there's a lot of famous play-by-play people who come to me for big calls. Remember when I gave Kevin Kugler the Final Four call?
Dave, don't listen to him.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen, he's going to give you a bad call, and it's going to be like an earworm, and he wanted Kevin Kugler for Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski's last name, to go, Coach K's okay.
Yeah.
Don't listen
Solid
to him,
goal.
Dave.
Believe me, I've had a lot of people volunteering things. Mm-hmm. Rarely do they get on the air.
Very wise. Wise,
Aaron,
Dave.
You can't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
What I tell you.
Yeah.
Don't listen to this Dave. Guy.
Believe me, that's not Dave. My deal. So
took the job. When you took the job, that you have a gold mine over here. When you need it. I mean, not that you will. Just remember,
no,
if you
good,
need
man.
To call the bullpen
hey,
at any
mucho,
point.
Mucho gracias, but no por favor.
Understood. We'll talk after.
Yeah. Offered, rescinded. Yeah. Dave Sims, congratulations on this awesome new experience for you, and in some ways, everything coming full circle with you
coming
back
home. Yeah, really
congratulations.
Thrilled. Thank you. Thank you very much.
We're really excited.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you. Speaking of things coming full circle, this has turned into a very interesting final hour of the show. We've got a little spectacle of a fight you may have heard of. Mike Tyson is back in the ring tonight fighting Jake Paul. My brother is covering the fight for New York Magazine. My brother is a best-selling author.
Brilliant writer.
Investigative journalist.
Yep.
And he's got a soft spot for boxing. We're checking. My brother is in Dallas, Texas, covering the fight. We're going to do that next. Don't move. It's Maggie and Perlow. Welcome back. All right, everyone promised they would be on their best behavior, and I'm holding you to it. I'm holding you and everyone here. You'd be on your best behavior because we got a very special guest joining the show now. I've made some references in passing at times to my older brother, Jeff Gray, best-selling author, investigative reporter, obviously the star of our family, that he...
No, that's not true.
...doing
baby.
The real work out
co-star,
there.
Co-star.
While I'm, you know, yakety-yakking with you about God knows what, my brother's out there doing the real work. And so my brother's always had this real, I don't say soft spot, but just a fascination with Mike Tyson and with boxing. And now Tyson is fighting Jake Paul tonight. My older brother, Jeff, is there covering the fight for New York Magazine. He's joining us now from a hotel room in Dallas. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, everybody. Great to see you.
Okay, so...
By the way, Jeff, Maggie is so anxious right now that we're going to embarrass her. So please help us embarrass her. This has been so much fun.
There's a couple stories I think you could go to. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, Andrew, if I can give you some pro tips here. Don't try tickling her. You know, if you want to keep all the seats dry, don't try tickling her.
I think that's an HR violation, though.
Yeah, it's not that Perloff can't tickle me like you used to when we were kids until I wet my pants. Thank you for that, Jeff. We're not even 2 minutes into the interview.
Yes.
Trying to do something serious here, guys. Like Mike Tyson fighting Jake Paul. I actually think the tickling pee your pants story is right on par for this fight because, Jeff, you wrote about him for New York Magazine, and we'll get to the news you broke about how bad Tyson's ulcer was in just a moment. But a lot of people are looking at this like it's a total spectacle. Some people are looking at it like it's kind of sad. You followed Tyson's career, and you actually are a legitimate boxing reporter, but you cover fights that are very serious with people's real careers on the line. How are you looking at it?
You know, I'm looking at it. This is an exciting, serious, fun, interesting fight. And whether there's 14-ounce gloves or 10-ounce gloves, who cares? You know, this is there's so much interesting stakes here. You have the tale of experience versus youth, the young lion and the old lion, which never gets boring. You have the incredible comeback story of one Mike Gerard Tyson, who came from the brinks of death recently with his ulcer, but also at the end, a roller coaster of addiction and abuse. You know, we were out last to dinner last night with some of his old friends, telling stories about how, rescuing him from the brinks of despair. He's a very American tragedy in a way, and has finally come in this last chapter for redemption in his view, in his tale, in his narrative arc. And then on the other side, you have Jake Paul, who's like this modern kind of like e-com, content kind of like, marketing machine. And he's got his people too. And I think that the fight itself, so that those are the narrative stakes, but then the technical nature of the fight is also very interesting, because Mike fights in a very unique style called the peekaboo, which hasn't been around in like 40 years. And Jake is almost like a traditional kind of white collar boxer. So to see those styles, those ages, I think it's a fantastic fight.
Jeff, in your story, excellent story in New York Magazine, you said that Mike Tyson was actually close to death with this bleeding ulcer on the plane. I'm curious, how did this not become a story? You noted that they kind of were able to bury it. I feel like, because this fight's been getting a lot of attention for a long time, why wasn't that let out to the public?
Well, what was let out to the public was he had a bleeding ulcer, which was true. The other details that Tyson revealed in our conversation was that he had 8 blood transfusions, and the doctor told him, it was close, and he had lost all this weight and had to recover. And incredibly, he's gone from basically two training camps, one to prepare for the July date, and then now starting again after this. So I don't know if they really wanted to cover it up. It's just that they didn't share the entire actual story.
My brother is joining us. My older brother, Jeffrey Gray. Jeff Gray, best-selling author, investigative reporter. And actually, I should mention this. We're on in Portland, Oregon, and we're on all over Oregon. If my brother's voice is sounding a little familiar to you or his name sounds familiar, my brother is one of the foremost experts in this country on a person named D.B. Cooper. A case called D.B. Cooper wrote a best-selling book called Skyjack, and it's all the Cooperites, Jeff. And I was thinking it's November, which is really their time to shine, because we're coming up again on the anniversary of the still unsolved hijacking of an airplane that happened, and Portland has become like ground zero for all the Cooperites. So for all those people, that's why my brother might be sounding familiar. But we're talking about the Tyson Paul fight now, because my brother got to interview Tyson and is there covering the fight for New York Magazine. You know what's funny, Jeff? We've been going a little bit back over Tyson's career just, with this fight tonight against Jake Paul. And we do something called the Great Debate on Wednesdays, and we did the greatest boxing match of all time. And none of us picked a Tyson fight. He is obviously has so many, the story of boxing can't be told without Mike Tyson. But do you think we were right to say that none of us, all 5 of us on the show, no one picked a Tyson fight? We picked Ali Foreman, Ali Frazier, Gaddy Ward. Was it EJ? What did you pick again?
I had Hagler Hearns,
and Manny, you picked
Canelo and Triple G II.
The second Canelo Triple G. None of us took a Tyson fight. Were we wrong on that?
Well, wrong, right, it doesn't matter. These are all great fights. Mm-hmm. Yeah. These are all great wars. All the fights you guys mentioned are known for their thrilling combat, The Gaddy War, just to see these epic, not say pummel fests, but these really balanced wars. The fight that – so in Tyson, in a way, outside of, some moments in the Evander Holyfield fight and others, he was so dominant coming up in his career. He was such a force – that most of his fights, half of his knockouts were all in the first round. The most defining moment fight to him, which I thought was interesting, was the James Buster Douglas fight, in which it was one of the greatest upsets in history, and he lost. And it was weird, why, Mike, do you think that your greatest loss is your greatest fight? I thought that was a really interesting thing. And he said, because I proved I could really take a punch.
Wow.
Despite really kind of not training and being sort of, personally all in toil after his trainer died and throughout his sort of some chaos of his earlier career, I thought that was interesting that he picked that to be his best fight, even though he lost.
Jeff, would you put Mike Tyson on your Mount Rushmore, say your top 4 great heavyweights of all time?
he must be mentioned. You know, he must be mentioned because of the youngest heavyweight champion and that accomplishment itself, going from literally reformatory school and the trajectory of being, you know, he had 38 arrests by the time he was 13. You know, Mike Tyson never thought he would live very long, and his friends are all he's paid for a lot of funerals, as he says. So attention must be paid to those feats. That said, there was a point in Mike's career where he never, due to a lot of factors, prison, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, was never truly able to ascend to the zenith. You know, he's a big ancient history buff. He was never able to get to the those Greek temples, you know? And I think that he sees this fight as his elevator there. And this is why it's so important to him for people to remember who he was, because so much pressure since he was a young child or teenager, he was designed to be this person to this moment, to reach this, and he never quite did. And I think that this is the moment that he thinks he can get there. And then beyond, in his mind, he think, you know, there's talk among people close to him about who's he going to fight next if he gets past Jake Paul.
Wow. All right, Jeff, we only got about 2 minutes left in the entire show. Thanks for doing this. What's your prediction? Mike Tyson's a big underdog.
Oof. You know, I can't say, but I see a couple things happening. Jake Paul is a very limited boxing talent. He's only started, you know, in his 20s, right? And you have to give him credit for standing in there. But his greatest punch is a right hand. And Tyson is a hooker and has got a left hook. He has other punches too. But I really see the fight kind of being a kind of like a combination between the left hook and the right hand. And boxing experts will tell you that often a right hand beats a left hook. Now, is it Jake Paul's right hand beats Tyson's left hook at 58? Or does Tyson is he just too much of a boxing talent to last into the middle rounds, you know? People say 2 minutes a round. 2 minutes is a long time.
Yeah. It feels like eternity. All right, we left 30 seconds left for Jeff to embarrass me more.
Just what? All right, we all have these Maggie Greg. We have to have you on just to talk about Maggie. Here's my question about Maggie. Has she always been this competitive? And I don't even mean that as a dig. She is hyper competitive.
You know, even in her umpire days when she was umpiring softball and Little League baseball, she was always hyper prepared. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, but I was wondering, board games where there did fights break out as kids?
You know, we tortured. I tortured Maggie for many years, right? There wasn't really much competition, I'll be honest. You know, it was kind of like a one-sided sport. And I don't know to what that figures into her preparedness, you know. But she, you know, she approaches sports journalism like an athlete approaches sports, and she never shows up unprepared. So
awesome.
I'll save that. Well, and I will say this to you, Andrew, is that, you know, I'm happy to, you know, to talk Maggie all day long, but we're in our family, we're quietly jealous of you because you kind of get to spend more time with Maggie than we do these days. So,
listen. I'm just glad that the number of camel clutches that I got put in as a child never made it into this interview until the very last second. Jeff, we're all out of time. Thank you so much. Enjoy the fight tonight.
Yep.
Have fun. Say hi to Mike for us. We'll see you soon.
Ciao, guys.
All right. See you. Love you. My brother, Jeffrey Gray.
Wow.
Best-selling author, fighting. He's covering the fight tonight. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul.
Now I'm in. Now I'm going to watch. You guys got me. Fine. I'm in.
Doesn't my brother sound like a writer?
Oh, my God. And his story is awesome. Go read it. It's really good.
New York Magazine. We all just got a little smarter. Thank you, EJ Stewart. Thank you, Manny Rodriguez. Thank you to Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, Nick Costos, Dave Sims, the Widows, the coffee drinkers.